This podcast was recorded at Hartford Street Zen Center, Isanji, in San Francisco. Please help support our temple by making a donation at hszc.org.
Scholars have, I don't know if uncovered is quite the right word, maybe discovered or, you know, they have reconstructed a view of life of Shakyamuni Buddha, which doesn't include many of the elements that we've come to regard as inseparably part of the story. So at least as I learned the story, Siddhartha was a prince in the Himalayan kingdom, and his father, the king, wanted him to take over the family business, so to speak. And he thought he could insulate his son from any tendencies towards, you know, spiritual life by creating an irresistibly wonderful and entertaining environment inside the palace compound. And then contriving never to let poor Siddhartha outside of the palace compound, where he might encounter something unpleasant. And as the story goes, he slipped away one day with his pal, the chauffeur, and managed to see something unpleasant. And same thing happened on some other occasions. But this new scholarship suggests that these are all later stories. And as is the case with so many spiritual figures, if you're able to kind of peel away the layers of the onion, the closer you get to the center, the less there seems to be. So in this instance, as these possibly later additions are removed, you wind up with a much less glamorous picture. And you have basically the image of a person just like us, with no special distinguishing qualities about his or possibly her life. Except the unbreakable thread of the story that this person, he or she, wanted to find out what it is we're doing here, and especially why it hurts so much, so often. I doubt that there are too many humans on our planet who have not wondered about that at one time or another. Why is life so difficult and painful so much of the time? So then this story, this another version of the hero's journey turns out to be a story about all of us. And Buddha's birth turns out to be a story about our birth. Birth is intimately our birth. And his or her story is our story. And the fact that the more fantastical elements came later to me, it kind of means we can add our own fantastical elements if we want. We can tell the story any way we want, as long as that sacred thread that runs through the whole narrative stays put. And that thread is to understand human life and suffering. And in particular, if suffering can be reduced, if not in fact eliminated, for oneself, can one do that with and for others? Well, Buddha's discovery was yes to both. One can profoundly reduce and in maybe some cases eliminate suffering for oneself, and then carry that certainty, that knowledge into the world and show others that path. So one of these mythological elements, and people who know me know that I don't use mythological to mean untrue. One of those elements, of course, is that as soon as Buddha popped into the world, he took 7 steps in each of the cardinal directions. And you see the little statue there. Buddha's got his hand in the air, pointing up, and also to the earth, saying, above the heavens and below the earth, I am the only honored one. And although I think some people have interpreted that in a kind of triumphalist way, meaning, the Buddhists are going to win in the end. The meaning of that, of course, is we are all the honored one. Buddha is speaking for all beings. And that that sacred search, that sacred impulse, is still with us after 2.5 millennia. So Buddha's birthday is one of a long list of spring celebrations and ceremonies the world around. The resurgence of life after the stillness of winter. And this too becomes a lesson for us. Our own world illustrating the unfolding of birth and death year after year in the seasons, and those seasons reflecting our own life. Reflecting the teaching of rebirth in Buddha Dharma. And just as in mythological stories, for instance, the Greek myths, the goddess Demeter spends roughly half the year in mourning for her missing daughter, who is gone someplace where Demeter cannot find her or follow her. And then yet, come spring, she emerges again. So for us, birth and death is not the drama of a single lifetime, but the drama of many, many, many lifetimes. And though we appear to be born and to die, that is looking at one segment of a possibly endless unfolding of energy. And the energy of the vow to save all sentient beings. The Bodhisattva, of course, could step off of the wheel of becoming, but does not, because it's too painful to contemplate the sufferings of other beings who have not yet heard the good news. So while sentient beings are sort of just carried around and around and around the circle of becoming, life after life after life, bewildered, frightened, and lost, Bodhisattvas enter that turning over and over again as brave warriors of the spirit, whose whole point of being alive and being in the world is to help us. So all of this probably didn't even begin with Shakyamuni Buddha. It may have begun, who knows, long before that. And it may even continue long after people have forgotten who Buddha was or is. So our little visit together today is one pearl on a string of gems. All of us will also be carried along on the power and energy of that vow to save all sentient beings, returning again and again on the wheel until all beings are free. So that was Buddha's only purpose for joining us. And going forward, sooner or later, that will be our only purpose. And then each of us will become, so to speak, an expert in the the path that reveals suffering, its cause, its ending, and the way to its ending. And that will be our work not only for this lifetime, but countless lifetimes to come. So I'm up for that. I have no idea what that will look like, but that's what I signed up for. And maybe that's what you all signed up for too. So that's good. We'll have the company of one another on what otherwise might be a kind of a lonely path. So I I wore my fancy robe and my fancy little socks so that we could just go right into the ceremony. Once I noticed that there weren't very many of us today. So I think we'll just do that next. It's very simple. Doesn't even involve circumambulation this time. So we'll do three bows. Let's see, offer incense, do three bows, chant the Heart Sutra, and then there's a special dedication. And during the chanting, I'll pour water over baby Buddha, just three times, three tippings of the dipper. And then after the ceremony, all of you are invited to do that if you wish. And I wish I could say, and then we have birthday cake upstairs, but I forgot to buy one. So we do have cookies. So I hope you'll join us for tea after. Are there any questions? I don't imagine there are, but just in case.
How old is Buddha again?
Today Buddha is, depending how you count, you know, he's 2,580-something.
One.
81.
2,581.
2,581. Yeah, it's getting up there.
And is this the day, the 14th of April, always, or is that a lunar?
In East Asia, it's usually the 8th of April. But we had an ordination last week, so we moved it a little bit. In Southeast Asia, it's usually May 2nd. So it's roughly around the same time. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, so... we'll wrap this up and maybe put the cushions back, and then we'll go right into the short ceremony. Thank you very much.